To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Good morning!
Crib Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next. Good morning.
As longtime listeners of this radio program know, I don't overreact. I'm not a flippin' come in here and just hyperbole overreact.
You wanted to fire Dan Bylsma after his first period of coaching.
Okay, well, I was probably right on that. As we start here the 10 a.m. hour on this Tuesday, October 20th, and by the way, Guy Junker blows his top in 15 minutes, so you don't want to miss this.
Gee, I can't imagine what it's about.
Yeah. But yesterday on the show, Tim, we were talking about Penguins weekend, Steelers weekend. We got a few emails that kind of stuck with me after we left here. One of them from a Pens fan saying, how are you being so hard on this team? They've just won a couple of games. They've righted the ship here. You're being too hard on these guys. A couple of Steelers emails saying, hey, let's pump the brakes here. Yeah, they've done a nice job. They've won a couple here without Ben Roethlisberger. 2-1, blah, blah, blah. This team still has flaws. They just lost their left tackle. You're overrating this team based on the recent past. Which is closer to accurate? We're overrating the Steelers. We're underrating what the Penguins have done here in the last week or so.
Well, if anybody paid attention to the Pitt press conference yesterday, I think we know what's going to make Guy blow his stack. Something that usually makes me blow my stack is Penguin fans acting like little babies when it comes to criticism of their team. They'll be critical of the Pirates and Steelers in comparison to the Penguins all the time. There's that natural hockey inferiority complex that exists of let's tear down the other sports to make our hockey guys look better. I talked about this during the summer a little bit when it came to football players getting in trouble, but none of the hockey community wanted to acknowledge the off-season hockey problems. That's a classic move by hockey fans. Penguin fans do it at a greater... Penguin fans are like hockey fans on steroids when it comes to that. In particular, when it comes to the mean media criticizing their team!
But they've been booed some there. They've been booed some at the arena already this year.
Yeah, it's okay for them to do it, but it's not okay for the media to do it. Like, the fans can do it. They can boo, and they can be upset when they go into the rink. But when we do it, when we talk about it, you got to be patient. It's early. Anytime you're critical of the team, it's the media attacking. Why is Rob Rossi such a hater? You know, I can't stand that. It drives me nuts. Look, their captain doesn't have a point yet. He doesn't have a point yet, but...
We've got thorough analysis here in the Trib, though, this morning.
Yes.
How he can change that.
Yeah,
he
the good
to shoot
news...
The puck more.
Let me just bring this up for you here at TribLive.com for Penguin fans who are concerned. The Trib Live has a link that you can go to where a thorough analysis of Sidney Crosby has been done, and the answer to scoring more is shooting it on net more.
This looks like a constellation map. This looks like the map of the Zodiac, mostly but net.
What is the other option? What, is he supposed to shoot it at the other net? Shoot it into the stands.
Might have as much a chance of going in.
I mean, well, look, Kessel's looked good to me. I mean, the weird thing about Crosby's
struggles... Especially when he was putting a shot off the side of the net with a gaping opening from a perfect pass.
That aside.
Here's what I'll say to the Penguin fans who are getting prickly that the media is being too hard on the team. I would say that if we're to be critical of the Penguins' lack of scoring, that's well within our right. We have every right to do that. This team was assembled to score 4 to 5 goals a game, right? That's the kind of offensive talent you allegedly have on this team.
And they haven't passed two in
any game
this year.
So let's be critical of the offense. The power play hasn't scored yet. Well, not just the captain power. So let's be critical of that.
It goes way beyond that, though. I mean, it's if you're talking about the two teams, the one that is the more real criticism. The Penguins haven't played enough to really criticize. Now, the Steelers are a big chunk of the way through their season, have suffered more injuries than people thought they would, and have gotten much better play out of their defense than they thought they would. And I don't think that has been overblown. They've been a pleasant surprise. This is a carryover from past seasons too. Whether that's fair or not, the Penguins have underachieved since 2009. I'm not saying they had to win another Stanley Cup, but every year losing to a team ranked lower than them or a team that most people thought they should beat until this last year when you knew the Rangers were a better team, whereas the Steelers have been to the Super Bowl three times. They've been in the championship game three times since that time. So that all carries over.
Yeah, but Tim,
they have not
Tim
disappointed
points
as
they
much.
They haven't won a playoff game. Tim always brings that up, the Steelers, since when?
They haven't won a playoff game since the 2010 season.
Since they went to the Super Bowl in 2010. They both have had some recent disappointments.
Yeah, but I think the Penguins' disappointment. First of all, I agree you can't be that hard on the Penguins at 2-3, especially with the way the rest of the division has gone, which I've been pointing out for a week. But apparently, the people complaining haven't listened to anything else. They only hear what they want to hear.
Right? Yeah. They only want to be aggrieved. They just want to be an aggrieved party, is what it is. And the point I was going to make was, if you're going to be critical of the scoring, fine, be critical of the scoring. I think we should also, though, and I think I have been anyway, while being critical of the offense, be a little bit complimentary of a defense that was supposed to be an atrocity and has so far allowed, what is it, 9 goals in 5 games or something
we
like that?
We spent a good deal of time yesterday talking about the similarity to the two, that you expected lots of scoring for and against of both of these teams, and have been pleasantly surprised that the defense has been good with both the Steelers and the Penguins.
The eyeball
now, Tim,
test.
You thought Marc-Andre Fleury might be hung out to dry with what yes. we were looking at, especially even in the preseason.
Yes,
he's
I
been
did.
Great.
He's been good, and I think that he was not so great against Montreal, but that's the only game where I'd look at and say that he was
poor. I was
poor.
Out of town for that. I didn't see that one.
He let in a couple goals that I think he would like to have back in that game. But still, just the there have been fewer chances than I anticipated from this defensive core. So
Saturday night, he had a couple of on-man breaks. He played well.
Against the Leafs.
Yeah, they hung him out to dry on a few occasions Saturday.
Yeah.
But I would agree with you.
And he didn't get tested all that much in the shutout against Ottawa, as a for instance. But he's been good. The defense has been good. It's been the offense that has been obvious to anybody who expected them to be an offensive juggernaut. If you've watched them at all, you know it's not there right now. Why wouldn't you talk about it?
Niemi is Niemi. Mike Smith is Mike Smith. Who was the third in that string?
When Penguin fans want to flaunt their stars in the face of the rest of the National Hockey League and say, we got Geno, we got Kessel, we got Sidney Crosby, we've got Chris Letang, you want to like pound your chest over how much star power you've got, don't be surprised when people talk about it when the stars don't produce.
Okay, but if I'm a Pens fan, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the babies, as you call them, that are upset here and hearing what they want to hear. Malkin's played well here the last couple games. That line has sparked. Perron was good Thursday anyway. He wasn't as noticeable Saturday. Kessel's had chances, he just hasn't finished. You guys
is it okay to point out Malkin has one power play goal in his last 48 games? Is that okay?
Well, the power
is that
unfair
disaster? Picking?
No, the power play is a flat mess. Nobody can argue that, right?
But how? I don't know. But I guess we can't talk about.
But how big
too hard on them? They are 2-3.
How important is a power play to the success or failure of a team over the course of the year?
Massively.
I don't know. I mean, the best power plays in the league, 30-some percent, 35. The worst, 15.
The playoffs? Penalty killing is far more important than the power play.
But in the regular season, if they don't have the stretch that they had to start that year last year with the power play clicking at the level that it did, they don't make the playoffs. The reason they made the playoffs last year was because their power play was so good in the early part of the season that it won them games. Enough games that they got off to a great start and it cushioned their horrible second half of the year.
Okay. The third line, the Bonino line, has been pretty good, right? Per the numbers, I mean, Bo Bennett was the best player on the ice before he got hurt. I guess that's another downer. But, I mean, you go line by line.
2-3, and the two teams they beat played and traveled the night before they played them.
Right, inconclusive. I think, to your original point, they've only played 5 games.
Right, it's very early.
But this goes back to my classic thing with hockey fans, which is, would you prefer we just not talk about them then? Because that turns into a bitch, too. How come you never talk hockey? You're talking about college football before you're talking about hockey. It's the off season for the Pirates. Okay, we'll talk about hockey. How's the hockey team
doing?
We
always talk hockey.
They're 2-3.
The Steelers are more than a third of the way through their season, almost halfway through their season. There's concrete evidence and things to talk about, and praising what they have done so far is not going overboard. Jumping off the ship for the Penguins already and talking about, you know, some of that is skewed by Rob, who's been very negative on the Penguins for a long time, and right now looks more right than wrong in most of the things that he's said. So, I mean, you know, but that's not us. But 5 games out of 82 is nothing.
But I was ready to pull the trigger on the coach, and still might be if they lose again here. You know, if they went 0-4, it was fire the coach time Friday morning. Ivan Hlinka was coming back up, and we were getting ready for the Mike Keenan story to start again, right? Was I wrong? They didn't look very good Saturday in the win. That's the other thing. They won the game, but if you watched Saturday, it was a struggle. It was, other than Malkin and Fleury,
They haven't looked very good since last December at all, anywhere.
Right.
I mean, that's the other part of the carryover. The Steelers were 12-4 or 11-5 last year and still made the playoffs. You know, they lost a home game to Baltimore, and that was a disappointment. I mean, you know, that you could call that underachieving. You've got the home game. You won the division. That's fine. But the Penguins have done that every year.
So I think we have been fair to the Penguins, to answer my question. Are we overrating the Steelers? Are we underrating the Penguins? I don't think we're underrating the Penguins. Maybe a little bit, just a tad, based on the last two games. They have won the games.
Yeah, I think based on what we've seen, we've been very fair. But what we've seen is such a bit, you know, do you want to wait until Memorial Day to talk about the Pirates? You want to wait till Thanksgiving to talk about the Penguins?
That's true.
It's this rationale from this fan base, which is why the team can get away with as much of it does when it comes to controlling the message and the flow of the discussion of the team. All you want is news from them, and all you want is positive news from them, that's why the Penguins are able to get away with spoon-feeding the masses with as much as they do on the radio side, on the internet side, because the team fan base wants a controlled message so obviously as it does based on the reaction you're talking about that you got.
I can't believe they really want that. They want all spoon-fed positivity.
You can't believe that?
Even if you're the biggest Homer fan, I mean, we got a few emails. I think more.
You tell me. I mean, I'm going based on what you told me you got in your email.
A few emails either way. Yeah, we got some Penguins fans that were, hey, back off a little bit yesterday. You're being too hard on this team. Of course, we talked a lot of Steelers yesterday for the majority of the day.
You know what? There's a lot, and I mean a lot of markets in America where after a football game like we had on Sunday here, that the hockey team winning a 2-1 game on Saturday. Given what also happened with the local college teams in town, oh, by the way, that local hockey team wouldn't have been mentioned at all on Monday.
Well, we had Rossi
on. You should be
on.
Happy that your team is cared about that much hockey-wise in this city to that point, that it's a flashpoint for discussion. And if you just want the positivity, go to the team website. Just seriously, go.
Yeah, we had Rossi on yesterday, and he talked about his column from Sunday, where he basically said, I'm not liking what I see. Yeah, they won the game, but I don't like what I saw or like what I am seeing in a long-term trend here. And he's talking about the coach as an obvious trigger point, which leads me to another issue before we get to the Pitt Penn State stuff.
Let me follow up on that for 1 second, okay? Yeah. That notion of winning, but I don't like what I see.
Yeah.
If the Steelers had won that game against Arizona, Landry Jones doesn't come in. They somehow figure out, they score a defensive touchdown. Something, I don't know. They figure out a way to beat Arizona. Michael Vick, a quarterback, throwing for 14 yards. And going 6 of 17 or whatever. Are we not supposed to say, hey, they won, but I didn't like what I saw from the quarterback? Because that's kind of what we're saying with the Penguins and Crosby right now. They won 2 in a row, but the captain hasn't scored, has yet to have a point.
Yeah, it's true.
The offense, which is kind of like the power play, is an atrocity.
We probably were saying that about Vic after the win 2 weeks ago.
We sure as hell were.
He was terrible until the end. But maybe something sparked. That was a tough one to evaluate because they were so bad for three quarters. And then Vic turned it on when it mattered.
And the conclusion I think we had was we were hoping that he was getting a handle on the offense and it sparked in him at the right time and would carry over another game, which it did not.
No, it didn't at all.
But the answers are right here. A Trib analysis says that Sidney Crosby could solve his early season scoring woes by putting the puck on the net. Not around the net. Not the other way down the ice. On the net.
I think we're undervaluing Jason Mackey's piece in the Trib today. I think there's actually, if you dig down into the graphics, this actually is very interesting.
Well, I'm sure there is. The headline is kind of funny, though. Not as funny as Sky High, but funny nonetheless.
Which was hard to top. Okay, I'm going to save my coaching discussion here for just a minute, because we got to get to Pitt-Penn State.
Yes,
we're brought
to
you here on Trib Live Radio, the morning sports report, by Duffy's Beer in Pleasant Hills, 412-653-BEER. And our great friends at Invisible Fence Brand. As you know by now, they are creating happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard and out of danger. InvisibleFence.com. Happy homes would not describe Pitt Penn State over the years, but it's been a while. 2015 years. How old were you, Tim, the last time Pitt and Penn State played?
What, in 2000? How old was I?
God, I was in college at Northeastern my second year.
Were
you still on KBL? Was it Fox Sports?
What year? 2000. No, it was Fox Sports.
I had just gotten to Columbus.
Tim was in Columbus, buddying up with Herbie.
Yep. Don't think that one was talked about too much in our college football show.
Pitt, Penn State are coming back next year. As we sit here this morning, Pitt is ranked, Penn State is not. Yesterday, unsolicited, Pat Narduzzi, who may or may not be here next year to coach that game, based on Tim's already fanning the USC rumors for the offseason.
Look, I know this. When this guy goes to USC next year, Jim Mora is going to hate his guts.
He's coming after Mora. Yesterday, he was asked about Nate Peterman and his accuracy. Quote, he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks I've been around. Is it play calling? Yeah, of course. You can have a talented quarterback with a bad play caller and make him look bad. We've seen that around the country, some closer than others.
If I'm Todd Haley, I'm pissed.
Yes, that's clearly what he meant.
He can't enjoy for 24 hours their being ranked for the first time in 5 years or being 5-1 for the first time in 6 years. Can't revel in his own success without Penn State envy getting in there somewhere. First of all, how much Penn State football has he watched this year? If he's watched any, shame on him. He should be. He has no business even paying any attention to what they are doing right now, playing at the same time, and they're not on their schedule this year. Secondly, obviously they've had problems up there offensively, and you can talk about maybe the play calling is bad. It's not his position to bring it up, but I would like to see two defensive linemen start on the offensive line for Pitt and two other starters come out and be replaced by guys that wouldn't even have been offered a scholarship 5 years ago and have those guys try to protect Vojtech or Peterman and see what the brilliant play calling at Pitt then would produce, because that's what they have to put up with up there right now. You want to talk about play call? Temple got pressure on Hackenberg with three guys rushing.
That's because, sometimes two.
That's because yeah. Dorian Johnson transferred.
So you tell me if it's all the point is, things are going swimmingly over there. Why do you, and he's jumping around and screaming because Michigan State come back and be, should he be still worried about Michigan State at this point? Shouldn't this guy be focused on what he's doing and the success he's had right there without having to worry about all this other stuff that's going on?
I heard that. I was driving yesterday, and I heard the soundbite, and I thought to myself, it's rare that a coach or even a player these days would say something that makes my ears go, whoa.
This was a pretty good tweet.
That was so intentional and so obvious.
Yes.
It's like, what are you going for here? The game is a year away. Now, I don't know. You tell me, guys, there's something that goes back to the Land-Grant game? Is there something from the Michigan State-Penn State game that I'm forgetting about? Or
well, other than that, no, I mean, they haven't played in the last... They've played once, I think, in the last 3 years. They were rotated off the schedule for 2 years, and then when they changed and set up the conferences, they didn't play. So,
you've often heard that other coaches don't like Franklin. I mean, is there something? Did something specifically happen?
I don't know. I mean, I know that a lot of schools aren't happy about all these satellite camps that he holds and goes to and things like that. Be that as it may, that's not the way you handle it. Even if you hate James Franklin, that's fine. I found that to be very holy crap. Pitt football has ascended to their highest point in 5 years. Enjoy it. Why start this? Why do you have to throw a comparison in there to Penn State? Look, Penn State's played two ranked teams. They lost to both of them. Pitt's played one ranked team. They lost to them. Penn State has won more games since the sanctions and the scholarship reductions came out than Pitt has. But the minute you get a little bit of stuff going for you, you got to come out and throw an arrow.
That's pre-Narduzzi, though. I wonder if he feels like, because he's been asked about Pitt-Penn State so much, he has to throw some logs on this fire to get it rekindled. Like, is he being told that? Do you think they're saying, hey, sell some tickets, let's boost this up a little bit? Throw a little jab in here at Franklin. You don't like him anyway from your Michigan State days?
I'm sure he's being told to sell some tickets.
Yeah, oh yeah, with Fritos and Pepsi to keep fans... Oh, no, that's to keep him in the stadium.
Keep him in the stadium, right.
To get them staying longer.
Not that you would ever get any kind of unbiased analysis from Shill Pit Radio, where you have to have permission from the athletic director before you can report that your coach has beaten up his girlfriend.
Or James from State College is... coming on, and you can keep him on.
We got to get him off because we got a commercial coming.
Yeah. Well, they have 32 minutes of those. I won't disagree with you on that. Is Narduzzi right, though? Is Donovan ruining Christian Hackenberg?
Could be. Oh, I mean, Penn State fans, it's not his position to put that critique out. That's the only thing I'm saying.
He
may be 100% right. I've been 100% right most of my marriage. I haven't dared bring it up, though.
I like it. From the standpoint of a neutral observer here, I mean, I like the fact that the Pitt-Penn State thing can be talked about in earnest because the game is coming up. However, for a coach who, in that circle, football coaching circles, it's always about the next game, what is right in front of us. Nothing outside distracts us. I will never buy that if he ever tries to sell it again.
Tim, like, he downplayed being ranked when he was asked, it's just a number. It means we have to work harder now. There's a place you can brag or thump your chest a little bit if you so want to, and nobody could criticize you. So you'll downplay being ranked and being 5-1, but you'll throw an arrow at a school that's had severe scholarship reductions and whose offensive line is such a mess that the quarterback can't perform the way he did before.
Well, they are at war for recruits, right? I mean, it maybe didn't used to be that way, but there are a lot of guys that are on the fence now, right, between Pitt and Penn State.
Oh, a lot of what you're saying I like. I like the fact that, from the recruiting standpoint, you're right. From the let's go sell tickets, let's beat the drum, let's rally the fan base, he's doing all that. I see the strategy behind everything Narduzzi is doing.
Let's light some fires, right? Sometimes you need to get attention your way. Just start flamethrowing a little bit.
Don't lose to Syracuse.
Well, this is the perfect week to do it.
Don't lose to Syracuse.
You don't think that's the tactical?
I know this.
When's our bye week? Oh, Syracuse, good enough.
This is going to lob the grenade?
Yes, let's throw the grenade.
Or is it just because he happened to see Trent Dilfer say it on ESPN first, and now he feels that he's empowered to say something because the mighty Trent Dilfer has made the same criticism?
What, of Donovan and Penn
yes.
State?
Yes.
Well, everybody has, right? I mean, other than people ripping Hackenberg himself, right? Some people were ripping the play caller, but even you guys
have said
we just overrated this guy too much.
You got to look at their operation in its entirety, not just talk about the play caller.
But seriously, Chris Peak or Jerry DePaul or somebody should just throw in a little question. Does Narduzzi talk again during the week at all, or is it just the Monday presser and that's it? Does he have a little gathering with the media on the field? Is there an update during the week or anything like that?
No idea.
Somebody should ask him, Pat, big picture here. Let's talk about how you rank in the Coastal and what you think your chances are of going to the ACC championship game. And when he gives, hey, the only thing we're thinking about right now is Syracuse. We got a game in the Carrier Dome on Saturday. We got to take care of business there, and then we turn the page to the next game against North Carolina. Just as soon as he says that, give a middle finger and say, screw you, you're a liar, because you're worried about Penn State's offensive play calling. You bring up Penn State's offensive play calling. You undermine that whole warm, fuzzy coach's blanket of, I don't need to say anything about anything except for the game that's right in front of us this week. Because we now know you're paying attention to everything else, all the peripheral. You're paying attention to Michigan State. You're worried about James Franklin's coaching. I don't buy it anymore when Narduzzi says, we're just focused on the game at hand. That's gone. That's out the window.
Are they upset maybe that Penn State didn't renew the rivalry for more than 4 years? Was that
that
part
might
of this?
Be part of it too.
I love it though. The hostility is back. I mean, I love every bit of this.
Well, the hostility will be back until he's coaching at USC next year, and then he'll be doing the same thing.
Wow, well, that's true.
You
don't really think that's going to happen, do you?
Maybe James Franklin will be coaching at USC next year.
I believe it more than Desmond Howard saying that Mike Tomlin's going to USC.
Is that who said it?
That's who said it, apparently. Okay. Yeah, I got a tweet after we talked about it on the air. No, somebody tweeted me and said that he said it on College Game Day.
Go after Mike Tomlin.
You watched it? Josh saw it. Okay. All right.
All right. Tell us.
No, I don't know, Guy. I don't know if he's going to USC, but I need to see a coach consecutive seasons in Pitt before I believe it'll actually happen anymore.
Tell us if you feel Narduzzi is out of line here. Didn't mention Penn State by name, but it's pretty obvious. Pretty darn obvious.
Oh, I mean, it
was... might
have
been talking about Chatham. That's pretty close.
Well, this
or
is
Ohio
like,
State. I don't know. Is their coordinator ruining Cardale Jones?
Struggling offensively.
Woody Hayes calling him the team up north. I mean, who else is he talking about? Cleveland State, you know?
I haven't seen any PSAC ball this year. Slippery Rock having some coordinator problems. Maybe they're... Or W&J. It's a little controversy. Maybe not a lot, but I wonder how Penn State reacts to this. When does Franklin... I'm sure he'll be asked about this at his next availability, right? And
oh, you know what the reaction
He's not
will be
quiet.
Which is today, right?
Hashtag
does he
we are.
Tuesdays?
Why would I care about what's being said in Pittsburgh? Why would I care about what Pitt says? That'll be his response.
Or will he rip the ACC or the state of affairs of the conference? I don't know. I mean, I would say Penn State's playing in a much tougher division conference overall.
Of course they are.
And Pitt has been great. You know I love him. But if they were playing Penn State's schedule, I don't know what their record would be.
To your point, though, about the hostility being back, boy, is it safe to do this year. Boy, is it safe to say something like that and then not have to play them.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah.
Well, next year. Heinz Field next year?
Yeah.
It is Heinz Field.
September 10th, I think it is. Yeah, to me, it's just, you know, it's not so much what he said. I mean, he's right. Their play calling isn't under question. It's just that it's not for you to say that. You know, I could call my brother a jagoff. If you call him a jagoff, I'm going to punch you in the mouth.
Right, like Penguin fans. They can boo the team, but goddamn if the media says anything bad about Sidney Crosby.
SportsTalkAtTribWeb.com. Matt emails, as regards to fans being babies, Tim, we should all hold our professional sports team to the same standards and criticize them when they deserve it. I've got a feeling when the Pens offense starts clicking and the defense will fall apart at that
point. Wait a minute. You've got a feeling. Well, if that happens, then that's what we'll be talking about. We're talking about a very unimpressive 2-3 start, a captain who's in the biggest drought of his career, and an 0-for-17 power play that has never happened in the history of the franchise. And you know what? I've been watching them since the history started, since 1967. This has been pathetic. So that, historically, don't tell me it's only 5 games. I'll just go there. How many years is it since 1967? 58?
I don't know. Well, Matt's concern is that they're not going to be clicking all in the same phase. Once they get the offense going, the defense is going to show up 48. To be what it really
and
is.
And I hope he's right. But that hasn't happened yet, so we're not going to. You know, it's not our job to sit here and say, "I think they'll be okay." Hey, Johnny, it's okay. I'll give you a lifesaver. Everything will be fine by tonight.
Okay, so when that happens, that's what we'll talk about, and then we'll say, "Boy, it's been hard for this team to put it all together, hasn't it?" Now the offense is going, and then the defense falls apart.
I wonder if actually the coach has that fear. If we go too heavy offense, our
D's
going to be.
I know you're insistent on that.
Well, he had that fear in the playoffs last year. Yeah. I haven't been a big fan of his since day one. And then they got off to a much better start last year than I expected. He just doesn't. He's not a guy that exudes confidence. He always looks bewildered. I can't imagine if you're playing for him, every time you look at him, he looks like he just lost his car keys.
No, you're right. For a team that's given up as many goals as they have, he always looks so surprised when it happens.
But I think his best coaching was in the playoffs. If they had any chance of upsetting the Rangers, it had to be in low-scoring games. They were not going to win 5-4 games against them. And he really gave them an opportunity, even though they lost each one of those games 2-1, gave them a chance to win, I thought.
Ken, your complaints about his coaching and their style about trying to weigh heavier on defense because they don't have as much talent in that end of the ice, that's well-founded. I agree with that. But my point always back to that is, when you assemble as much alleged offensive talent as you have, you should be able to score on a lower volume of puck possession and shots, right? Like, if you have Crosby and Malkin and Perron and Letang and all these guys that you say are great offensive players, then when you do get offensive scoring chances, the percentage by which you score should be higher based on their alleged talent.
Right.
You shouldn't need the volume to do it quite as much.
Agree with that. We have sound of the year, Narduzzi shot across the state Commonwealth. We should probably play this since we were just talking about it. I dropped the ball, not getting to this sooner. Here is the Narduzzi audio from yesterday, courtesy of G.A. DePaula.
It's all play calling, and it's all Coach Chaney. No, come on now. It takes players. Right, Nathan? Did you hear that question up here? Yeah, good. You know, he's been excellent. Is it play calling? Yeah, of course. I mean, you can have a talented quarterback with a bad play caller and make him look bad. We've seen that around the country, some closer than others.
So it was prompted.
Was it prompted?
That's the longest I've heard. I only heard the clip about him saying it. First of all, he sounds like Pete Bell in Blue Chips. You remember Blue Chips?
It's been so long since I've seen Blue Chips.
During the press conference, Josh, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh,
and he right? And he right? When he, hey, Happy, and hear that question about the tractor, Happy? That's who he thinks he is. That just struck me. That's exactly who he thinks he is. He thinks he's Pete Bell from Blue Chips.
He's asking questions of himself up
yeah.
there?
Yeah. Hey, Happy, you hear this one?
Got to be a salesman.
Fully loaded Lexus, right, Happy?
I'll take this over the comatose Paul Crist, who we played nary a soundbite of during his entire
tenure.
Well,
that's true. That's fair, yeah.
Absolutely. That is true.
From Dan.
Todd Graham was an interesting listen, too, but...
Yeah, we played a few of his sound bites.
Is that what you want?
Sometimes you got to handle both ends, on the field and off the field. Attorney Dan says, if you check the regular season stats on PK and power play for the last 5 cup winners, guys, it's been pretty middle of the road across the board. It's surprising to me.
0-for-17 is not middle of the road.
Well, it's only 5 games.
That's last place.
And they didn't sign Gonchar. They went against the Laird plan.
If they were in
I've said
first
a million
place,
times, penalty killing is much more. Power plays in the playoffs, first of all, they shrink in opportunities, and that means the percentages end up going down. I agree. Power play, when it comes to playoffs, is overdone. This team in particular would have been in big trouble many of their regular seasons without a dominant power play. They've had great regular season, and it's part of the reason why they haven't continued to play as well in the playoffs, because there aren't as many called, and they're not as easy to maneuver, and other teams are concentrating on shutting it down.
That's true.
To that emailer and the typically defensive Penguin fan base, as I was outlining, if they were in first place and they had the best power play in the league and they went on an 0-for-17 stretch, we talk about it. It's worth talking about when it happens. I'm sorry if you don't like bad news, but 0-for-17 is a bad stretch and worth bringing up.
Hey, it never happened before in 48 years of their existence. It's significant.
They were, last year, Guy, excellent on the power play early in the year, and their record was great.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah. That's why they made the playoffs last year.
And it's been like that. It's been like that in the regular season for a long time, Ken. All their goal scoring, their great power play, and even, I think 2 years ago, power play and penalty killing were both near the top. But when that
PK's top half this year, I was just checking on that.
That dries up in the playoffs, though. So, I mean, if you're looking for long-term reasons why, and I've said this for a long time, if you are playing against these guys you're Calgary and you're playing them on a Tuesday night in February, the fourth of a five-game road trip, you are not doing what's necessary to keep a 5-on-3 power play shut down. You're not diving in front of shots. You're not skating with Sidney Crosby like a fly on poop all night. If it's the playoffs, you will. And that's why you get a false sense of how good they are as they have a free skate through the regular season.
Yep. From October 25th of last year through November the 6th of last year, they had a stretch where they beat Nashville 3-0, New Jersey 8-3, LA 3-0, Buffalo 5-0, and Minnesota 4-1. All right?
What were the power play numbers in there?
During that stretch, 2 goals against Nashville on the power play, 2-for-3. New Jersey, 3-for-7. Los Angeles, 2-for-6. Buffalo, 3-for-5. Minnesota, 1-for-3. The power play carried them through this hot
run.
Go to
March, Tim. Go to a 4-game stretch in March.
Okay.
Since you got the grid up.
All right. March. Let me find somewhere in March here. Okay, here's a good stretch in March.
With five defensemen.
0-for-1, 0-for-4, 0-for-4, 0-for-3, 1-for-3, 0-for-3, 0-for-4, 1-for-4, 1-for-4, 0-for-3.
That's all consecutive.
Yes.
Yeah. They had more power play goals in one game against Anaheim. And
1-for-4 is not bad. I'll take 1-for-4.
Okay, but that was also sandwiched in with 0-for-4, 0-for-3, 0-for-4, 0-for-4, 0-for-1,
yeah.
0-for-3.
The problem is they don't even look close. I mean, if you're watching them Saturday, they're just a mess.
And the 2 1-for-4s I gave you?
Yeah.
They lost both. They lost one of the games, 2-1, and the other one they won 3-1.
Scott and Wexford emails. On the power play, guys, the powerless play. I'm guessing here, but before Tockett was hired, he was interviewed relentlessly from the Pittsburgh media, and he said at the time the Pens set up the power play all wrong. Guessing, but I don't think the players are listening to the coaches. When Sid ends up in the right circle half boards, I think they're misaligned. That's where Malkin should be for his one-timer. It's amazing also that they struggle so much just gaining the zone. Lowly Toronto was able to gain the zone. It's almost laughable in comparison. And once the Pens actually gain it, the setup, the puck movement is so predictable and never changes. He says, blame Shiro for underbidding on Jágr. That guy would have fixed this powerless play, LOL. Jágr coming in tonight. I don't know about that, but...
They have, since April 1st of last year, 3 power play goals. 2 in one game against the Rangers in the playoffs, 1 in a 4-1 loss to Philadelphia on Sunday, April 5th. They had 1 power play goal in April last year before the postseason, and then they had 2 in 5, 7, 10, 13 opportunities against the New York Rangers in the playoffs. And now 0-for-17. So they are 3 for, what's that math then? 3 for like 30-something.
If they're going to play this way, and like they did in the Rangers series where they try to win 2-to-1 games, then the power play becomes even more important because you've got to take advantage of the opportunities you get. So I will say that. If they're going to win games 6-to-3 and open it up, and they can, then you don't need it as much. What's one power play chance. Sam's Drunk Dog emails, Narduzzi is just chirping because of the chirping started by Penn State, and mostly he's trying to get some local recruits to Pitt that are being recruited by PSU. What did Penn State start the chirping?
Well, he should explain that. You've
got to explain that,
Sammy. The chirping started with Pitt's offensive line coach back in the remember what did he write? He tweeted something out. Remember that? Something about...
Is this email referring to James Franklin saying we're going to dominate the state?
I think that's the very first... first press conference when he came in and he said that. And that wasn't even just directed at Pitt. That was directed at he wants to dominate the state. It's okay for Dave Wannstedt to talk about he's going to build a ring around Allegheny County or whatever and talk about you got to recruit, you know, you can't let the local... It's okay to say that.
Well, what about the James from State College phone call to Brand X? Is that chirping? Is that out of line? Is that worrying about... It's not worrying about Pitt so much, but it is the Pitt station. So I think some people took it that way. You know, what if Narduzzi called State College Radio and came on as Pat from Pittsburgh? You know, like would people get up there and get upset about it? Quit worrying about State College. That could be classified as starting it or chirping.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know about that one.
Mickey says
any radio station I ever worked at, if someone of that stature just called in to talk, I would take advantage of it. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Hurry off to a commercial.
Well, that's for sure.
Because I carry the other team's games. If Joe Madden would have called them the day before the wild card game and wanted to talk about the Jake Arrieta's pitching, would they have talked to him?
Good question.
Well, you have to hurry through James from State College because Joe from Slippery Rock is waiting on line.
That's true. Matt from Shaler would have get his take for the eighth time of the day.
Joe from Slippery Rock might have been my favorite Clint Hurdle comment. If we're talking about coaches that are blowhards. Oh, and what did Madden say? What was Madden's thing yesterday?
Oh,
Give me the thing about Rocky.
It's tremendous. The Cubs are down 0-2. Okay.
Toronto won last night, right? 11-8.
Toronto won in a blowout.
Yeah, boy. I just wanted to settle on the couch and watch a little football and baseball, and both of those games left me watching Jamie Lee Curtis in the original Halloween.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I watched the Star Wars trailer. Did you watch the Star Wars trailer?
Yeah, that was good. Halftime of the...
Oh, am I ready for that?
You're a big Star Wars geek. I never pegged you for that.
For the Star Wars? I love Star Wars.
You don't scream geek, you know.
No, but I mean, I don't know anything about Star Trek or video games. I just
Star Wars. Huh?
Star Wars is my favorite movie as a kid. You're talking about my wheelhouse. I was five when Star Wars... You're a five-year-old kid
when the first
Star Wars comes out?
I was in college. I feel so
what?
Old. Yeah, I saw the original Star Wars.
When did you graduate from college?
78.
Did you like it when you saw it? Or were you like, eh?
Oh, no, I liked it a lot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I mean, the effects were unbelievable. I mean, I didn't get caught up and want to have, you know, figurines on my desk in my office or anything like that.
Not like
that,
Taylor, but... who's got Jabba the Hutt and he's painting the Millennium Falcon out in the hallway. All right, Joe Madden.
So he'll be a stormtrooper again this year for Halloween, Josh.
Yeah, Josh is. Joe Madden has had some unique tactics this year. He's had zoo animals out. He's done a lot of music to lighten the mood this year. He had apparently on a trip to Milwaukee, Elton John's Philadelphia Freedom playing. When they were going to Philly. Polka music before a trip to Milwaukee.
What do you do for Pittsburgh? Donnie Iris.
I don't know. So streaming out of Joe Madden's office yesterday was sounds of the Rocky soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Including Gotta Fly Now,
right.
And Joe Madden said, Rocky set a great example in 1976 for all of us, and talking about having to come back from adversity, climb out of a hole. We get behind the eight ball a little bit, sometimes you got to pound some big slabs of beef in the cooler.
Mm-hmm.
You'll come back and you're fine. So he's trying to take this little tactic.
Quick interjection.
Rocky
here.
At all? You find the Cubs to be Rocky?
Rocky lost.
Well, I think that's his point. They're down 0-2.
Rocky
lost.
They got
to come back for Rocky 2.
Oh, so now we're going to go right to the sequel?
This is the
sequel. Are we talking about Rocky or are we talking about Rocky 2?
We're channeling Rocky Balboa. I don't know.
Cuff and Link. Two turtles.
I love that. You know, everybody, Rocky this, Rocky. It took Rocky 3 years and a sequel to win.
Remember that?
That's great.
Yeah, the two turtles.
Cuff and Link or Lester and Arrieta.
How do you spell Del Rio? What the hell happened? Arrieta's been hit twice now since the Pirates played him. Clint Hurdle's got to be fuming.
Yeah. Tony Watson's 93-mile-an-hour sinker off of his elbow, I guess, his non-pitching elbow.
Are they in trouble? Now they've lost. Lester and Arrieta have lost. So now what do they got tonight? They got the bullpen game or what?
They got Hamill and Heron, right? Is that what they're doing? Or are they coming back with Arrieta again on a couple days' rest?
You got Hendricks tonight.
Hendricks, I'm sorry.
Hendricks tonight, Hamill tomorrow. Two games at 8 o'clock. Mets, though, have DeGrom tonight and then Mats tomorrow. That seems like a more of a toss-up game.
DeGrom's not
DeGrom's tough tonight. They could be down 0-3.
You know what? If you had given me
it's the Billy Goat curse. I was right, just delayed.
Gosh, I would have taken every team in the playoffs before I took the Mets, even though
I think I would have, too.
I like their pitching. I always liked their pitching, and I thought they pitched themselves to about four, maybe even a divisional series against the Dodgers. I thought they would pitch themselves to a five-game series, and they'd all be like 2-1, 3-1, and they'd end up losing L.A. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Well, it's not over. I mean, the Blue Jays did win their home game last night, and now all of a sudden a 2-1, it looks, and Cueto got rocked. It looks all the more winnable. So, big game tonight, though. Clearly, they get
well. You know, the thing that watching now and didn't even listen to some of these pitching matchups, because for a while, you know, the wild card games and the early parts of the DS is all the stars were pitching. This is what the Pirates were built for. You get the Pirates deep into a series like this, they would have the favorable pitching matchups. You split the first two games with the studs pitching, and then you get down three or five. I mean, the biggest disappointment to me will always be about this season, that this we didn't get to see this team. I think this is the best Pirates team in 25 years.
We got robbed of J-Hap.
Compete in a series where you actually get to do some things, where if you have a bad game, you can survive and go on to the next one. But I still think they, like Tim said about the Mets. I mean, how can you watching the Pirates destroy the Mets this year? And
they owned them.
The Dodgers to boot.
That was before David Wright was back, though, wasn't it? I think they caught them when they were pretty.
The
depleted.
Pirates were lucky when you take a look. I remember early in the year, it seemed like every series they had, they were missing the star, the ace of the other staff. You know, they didn't face Sale when they played the White Sox. They didn't play. You know, they missed Greinke and Kershaw the first time they played the Dodgers. I think they missed them both, didn't they?
Greinke.
They beat Kershaw, okay. I mean, that happened a lot, especially teams that had one ace. It just seemed like they missed them.
Mickey emails.
I mean, they played the White Sox four games, back-to-back, two here, two there, and Sale was the only odd guy out. And he didn't have to,
What the hell is the matter with you guys, Mickey writes. Why can't Pat Narduzzi make a comment? These teams are recruiting the Pittsburgh area. Stop protecting Penn State.
We can make a comment. He just better be ready for the ramifications.
We gave you the reasons.
Don't be Pitt and then lose to Syracuse.
We
this
gave week. You the reasons. Coaches don't. It stands out. Everybody's talking about it. It's not just a comment.
Oh yeah, that was not.
It's
yeah.
an aside. It's a knock against a team that's not even on your schedule.
Don't just call it a comment. He knew what he was doing.
Oh,
that was calculated. That
was
intentional. That was he was pushing the envelope. He's feeling his oats.
He flicked his ear. He went right behind and went. Bing.
Hey, we beat Georgia Tech. Yeah, that's right. I can do these things now. That's Georgia Tech, my friend.
I approve of this, by the way. Not all of us are on this disapproving. Sean says, I don't see this guys like you are. To me, it's strictly recruiting-based. He's telling potential recruits Penn State coaches are awful, and if you go there, chances of development as a player or potentially to get you is the next level. You don't want to go there because you'll be stunted. I think it's a fair play. Well, you're right, Guy. Maybe a lot of Penn State fans would agree with him and want Donovan out and might just say, hey, I agree with Narduzzi's right on
like
the money.
Like I said, you can call my brother out, but I can call my brother out. You can't.
Craig,
and damn right well all these emails. If Franklin would have had the exact same aside knock at Pitt, if he would have said something like, "Well, some schools even when they get full scholarships don't win as many games as we do." Oh my God, 11 people would be turning back in their Fritos and Pepsi.
Craig says this has been going on between the coaches for a while now. This is great for sports. Pitt's admitting they aren't scared of Penn State. They're in the middle of a huge recruiting battle, and they're trying to sell their program.
Why should they be scared of Penn State?
Guys, he says,
just by saying that admits that at one point you were.
Well, they should be. Why shouldn't they be? They should both be concerned about each other
for
recruiting battles. That's big. You think Jordan Whitehead going here as opposed to Penn State didn't make a difference? Made a huge difference. We mentioned Johnson. Why did Dorian Johnson leave? He committed to Penn State, then he
flipped.
Well,
because of the Sandusky crap.
Yeah.
Okay. Same thing with J.P. Holtz was going to go to Penn State and decommitted.
Craig says, Guy, take your Penn State undies off. That would be awkward for us.
Take your Pitt undies off. And let's not talk about either then.
No, don't you both leave him on, actually? Please.
No, because there's not another guy in this town that will take this stance.
Chris emails. Good stuff, guys. The only time I hear you sound like a homer. I love how you take this so personally. How long has it been since the region had something like this? Forever. It's fantastic for college football. Pitt and Penn State are supposed to despise each other. I grew up on that. It's been missing for so long, I forgot those emotions. Glad to see some animosity back in what used to be the best rivalry in college football.
At any other time, this would, if this were even said in the summer or the spring, it wouldn't have perked my... This is said at the highest point of Pitt football in 5 years. And you still got that Penn State envy that you have to bring Penn State into the mix when you should be pounding your own chest.
All right, now I'm going to need some historical perspective here. All right, I'll plead ignorance on this one because, you know, I went to Syracuse and I love watching the Pitt-Penn State game from Connecticut because my folks were Pitt people. You know, my family is Pitt people. My dad worked at Pitt. My grandfather went to Pitt.
Oh, I did not.
I remember the Pitt-Penn State rivalry being great. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what a lot of people that you've read emails from so far today have said about, like, the sniping. Like, did Paterno snipe at Pitt like that? Mm. Did Gottfried or Foge or Jackie snipe at Penn State like that? Like, take a direct shot at Joe and his coaching? Did they do that?
I don't remember that. I mean, like, you know, I hated doing the talk shows that week because they got so nasty. It wasn't fun. It was nasty crap.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
but no, I don't know. Paterno made the remark he didn't want to leave college football to the Jackie Sherrills and Jimmy Johnson's world, but Sherrill was already gone from Pitt then.
Yeah, he was already at Mississippi State, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I'm asking is, these people who keep saying this is the way it used to
cutting
be.
Cutting the testicles off longhorn steers.
Yeah, that was
That's just
unique.
With the fans. That's the way it used to be with the fans. Like, I don't remember Jopa saying, I can't believe it, you're play calling at Pitt.
No, I remember one stupid thing. He complained about where Sue's seat was at a game at Pitt Stadium, though. Remember that? There's one there that just came to mind.
They put baby in the corner.
They put her somewhere. I don't know.
Well, I'll take it all back then. That's important.
That is. So. That's a slight. Stick down, challenge the Chiefs. Brian emails. Three thoughts from today, guys. Penguins will not win another cup with this two-headed monster model. I would trade an old Sidney Crosby, but management won't. He sells more tickets than Malkin. Two, the Pirates should be rooting for the Cubs to win the World Series. That would make them less hungry next year, and if the Cubs don't win it, they will spend more money to win it.
That's
after
an interesting
losing
point.
This year. Part three, Tim, can I pose a question to you to pose to Tomlin at the presser today? Tim, of course, is always down there representing us.
He's representing.
My question would be, Mike, did you overcook your thoughts when you went for two? He may like how you phrased the question.
I wonder if Mike would pay attention to Hurdle saying overcook.
Oh, is that a Hurdle? It's not a Mike?
Oh, no, that was Hurdle. Remember overcook with Esrod? That was his big thing on the day before the game was you don't want to overcook your decision. He said it two or three times during
the press. Well, Tomlin said Ziggy Hood's still a bun in the oven. We didn't take him out yet. That was overbake. He was underbaked.
Well, I just don't want to use that about Martavis Bryant. Like,
he's still in the oven, by the way, too.
He's still in the
oven. Gas company shut off the gas.
He's still a bun in the oven.
I don't know about Ziggy eating too many buns.
Sam emails. You guys are right about the fans and the bad news. All three teams have problems, but the Penguins seem to have the most. If you criticize a team, the fans can't stand it. Some of the media members are shills and won't criticize a team, but the Penguins and the Pirates fans are the worst.
Well, I sort of said that in the not only yesterday on the show, Ken, but I wrote about it for the Trib Live blog today. I'll tweet it out in a little bit. But you know, the topic that I took from our show yesterday was Vince Williams' tweet, David DeCastro's comments, Mike Mitchell's comments from the Steelers. Guys, you're a great story. It's not often you can position the Steelers as sort of the little engine that could. The Steelers have a huge national fan base. They are usually picked to win their division or be in the playoff hunt. Rarely are they the, hey, how did they get there? How are they doing this? You don't get to say that about the Steelers too often. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the moment. Have some fun.
You more
with
often
it.
Say, how did they not do it?
Right, exactly. Right. So you've got a great quarterback. You got a coach that other people want, even though he's had his problems here. So enjoy the moment. You know, don't the Mike Mitchell thing about we got to take respect. No one gives our defense respect. Yeah. Your defense has been overrated for 5 years. You know, David DeCastro saying, I don't know why you people are surprised. Why is everybody surprised by Landry Jones? Because I watched him. That's why I'm surprised.
Well, that's a good point. You know, a lot of this is based on expectations that we have or the media does or what we perceive that the expectations to be. Like, we lowered expectations for the Steelers' defense so much, it now has become fun to watch them overachieve, right?
It took a long time to get there. I mean, years. It was a paradigm shift for people in Pittsburgh. It took last year, 56-28 or whatever it was against the Colts, and 40-something or whatever against the Ravens.
And a coordinator leaving. And
yeah, they needed LeBeau to leave before they allowed themselves to say, hey, our defense wasn't very good.
Well, this is funny because, like, on the showdown Sunday on Channel 2, we were talking about Pitt. And you know I love Pitt, so I was gushing about them. And Filippone's like, how can you expect them to win the division? That's not fair to them. So you're saying these are like easy games coming up. You know, like, not fair. What's not fair about it? I believe in this team. I see some talent. Their expectations should rise. Shouldn't you want expectations to now be for Narduzzi and Pitt? Yeah, we have a chance to win the conference. We should win this conference with as good of a team as we've got assembled here right now. Instead, like, he's trying to flip it the other way that, well, what are you going to do, kill them if they don't win the conference now? Yeah, I might. I might kill them.
It's fair. Why not kill them?
You got North Carolina here in a week and a half? You're undefeated for the first. You got some momentum rolling?
I'm with you, Ken.
Expectations.
10 wins.
Should be raised. And for the Steelers, too. We'll probably hold them to a higher standard going forward. Jason in the Berg. Emails. How do you guys feel about on the power play, instead of working the puck up front, why not trying to generate from behind the net, have the goalie guessing and looking back and forth instead of having the whole game in front of him?
Well, I think changes would be good, period. If, you know, I like Sidney Crosby. I think he's a great person. He's been a great player. He's had some medical. But his stubbornness on the – who's running the team, him or the coach?
Him.
Him or the general manager? Him. He is. You know, everybody, right? Eddie Johnston, who's a power play genius, says he's in the wrong spot on a power play. He insists on staying there. You would think the lack of success would get through his own head and say, I got to try something else.
A lot of people thought when he first came in the league that they tried to do that, is run the power play from behind the net, because Gretzky used to do that.
Yeah.
And they don't see that too much
because
anywhere
he's got
now.
No one really does it anymore.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. The nets are closer to the dasher boards now than they were when Gretzky was in the league. They moved them back. There's not as much space back there, I believe.
SportsTalkAtTripWeb.com. Travis emails. First off, Narduzzi needs to shut his mouth and worry about his own team. Not to repeat what Guy said, but if Pitt were in Penn State's situation, Pitt would have two wins. I will admit, if Pitt were to play Penn State this weekend, Pitt would surely win. I would assume Narduzzi's beef with Franklin probably seems to...
Hold on for a second. Stop right there before you go on. How would Pitt only have two wins if Pitt would be better than Penn State?
Yeah,
that doesn't really make much sense,
really
does
much.
It?
No.
No, no. He said if they were in their situation, meaning
okay. I thought he meant like their schedule. Okay. All right.
Travis says, I would assume this beef with Franklin seems to stem from his dominate the state comments last year. Regarding the Pens, just fire the whole staff and let Gino and Sid coach the team. Or
but,
hire Derek
you know
Schooley.
Our work here is done for the day. Problems are also see.
Thank
see this Pitt Penn State thing, and nobody that is a Pitt fan is going to think there's anything wrong with what he said, and nobody that's a Penn State fan isn't going to be pissed at what he said. It's not up for discussion, really, because you're just going to take whatever side, whatever school you root for.
Well, what if you don't have a rooting interest?
Well, you don't. So you tell me what you think of it.
I like it. I like Narduzzi.
Well, you like it because it's causing talk show controversy.
Pretty much.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, you tell me. Does he have any business saying something like that? I mean, you would be voting anybody else if this were the week before Texas, Oklahoma, or Ohio State, Michigan. You'd be voting that coach Jag off of the week.
Oh no, we kind of liked the Bielema stuff with Klingsbury, didn't we? We kind of wallowed in that.
We pretty much ripped Bielema pretty good, didn't we?
No. We ripped Bielema for trying to draw the penalty like he was a Montreal Canadian. That's what we ripped Bielema for, was for his flopping. Well, I'm with Ken. I'm sort of neutral on this one. I always lean towards Pitt when it comes to Pitt-Penn State because that's who I grew up rooting for. But I don't dislike
Pitt. I grew up rooting for.
Pitt?
Yeah.
Well, I was the same way.
I would have went to Pitt, but their journalism department isn't any good.
Yeah, I went
Seriously.
To Syracuse.
Same thing.
Yeah, I went to Syracuse.
Hashtag
they better...
Pitt News. That's the shot by Guy.
But, no, the point about Penn State is I don't hate them as much as I used to because I didn't like Paterno. Now Paterno's gone, and, you know, they've kind of lost me when it comes to relevance until they get back into being really good again.
You didn't like Paterno?
No, I did not like
Before
Paterno.
Before the whole thing?
I didn't like Paterno. I mean, it's just He was.
But you say that, and yet they've won more games and have won a bowl game than Pitt has.
Oh, since, I didn't say Pitt was relevant either.
Okay,
though.
All right, okay.
Now, nationally, Pitt is not relevant, not at all. I mean, they finally, for the first time, they've crept into the top 25. They are borderline relevant.
And that's just why this whole thing is so curious to me. They should be feeling so good about the way things have, the job that he's done. He's done a fantastic job. They're good. I mean, they are becoming relevant again. The Notre Dame game will be sold out, even if half the people there will be Notre Dame. I'm going to see what the attendance is like, as long as they don't stink the joint out at Syracuse, when North Carolina comes here. Louisville, Miami, they got four of their last five games at home. This can be a fantastic year. Why take this opportunity to draw Penn State into the conversation?
It's the best
this
time.
Is just so typical. They, you know,
my response is I like it, but boy, has he set himself up. Boy, has he set himself up. Not just for 327 days
stakes.
From now.
Yes.
No, not Jim Tressel in the middle of the Schottenstein Center in 327 days. I'm not
maybe
talking about
that.
Maybe
for this Saturday even.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, please. If they, Syracuse.
Okay, maybe not this Saturday.
Next
but
Saturday.
North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Duke. Miami.
Good.
Louisville.
Let's raise them.
Okay, let's talk about your play call. I will
Don't
talk
live
about
in your fears. Let's raise the stakes a bit. Let's
get the trash
Pitt.
Talk?
Let's get Pitt on the map. Come on.
All right.
Scott emails, what are the odds Franklin and Narduzzi have a pact to drive up interest in the game next year? This is all part of a secret plan of theirs.
Very little.
Yeah, there could be something to that.
If that was a pact that they came up with, I'm sure it didn't involve taking shots at us after we lost 38-10 to Ohio State.
Well, yeah, we got personal then, if that's the case.
This is like, you know, play.
And if you were paying attention to that game, which he obviously couldn't have been, it wasn't because of play calling, as we discussed yesterday.
It was a night game.
It was because of bad execution. Play calling does not cause your tight end to drop a wide open pass at the 20-yard line. Play calling does not have a 44-yard touchdown called back because of an iffy holding call. That's not play calling. And that's the part that bothers me, too. Penn State fans aren't happy with this coordinator either. They think this guy's regressed under him. That's more on the coordinator than it's on Franklin. You know, Bill O'Brien's such a great coach. He's having a hell of a time in the NFL right now, isn't he? The point of it is they're playing with, as I said, two former defensive linemen on the offensive line and a bunch of other guys who are hurt.
What's going to happen when he drafts Hackenberg next year? He's got Hackenberg, Mallett, and Hoyer all together.
Well, they'll beat Jacksonville. David Collier says...
In London.
I'm a Penn State fan, guys. My father always said, don't spit too high. I like Pat N., but again, falling into the same crap that Pitt fans do, more worried about Penn State than Penn State's worried about Pitt.
That's right. That's the whole point. I like him, too. I think he's done a great job. This starts to ruin it for me.
Meanwhile, Scott Schaefer's up in Syracuse right now saying, take a shot at me! acknowledge me!
We matter. We used to have something great.
McNabb played here. Jim Brown played here.
Dave says, like I said, you make the top 25 and you're worried about Penn State. There are issues in Happy Valley. Word has it the coaches are not on the same page. Shoup wanted to go to LSU and will leave after the year. There's a reason Jim Haslett is the defensive consultant this year, and Terry Smith has been looking to leave. But Pat N. still needs to be quiet. They haven't played anybody but Iowa.
And they lost. But it was a moral victory.
To a team from Penn State's conference.
Who's ranked? Does Penn State play Iowa this year?
No.
No, they don't. Oh, that would be great.
They're ducking them.
They don't play any crossover games, huh?
Nebraska, right? Or is that not on there this year either?
No. Penn State's got Maryland, Illinois, Northwestern, Michigan,
yeah,
Michigan
there's too
State.
Many teams That's in what conference. Pitt should I don't do. Like that, no.
Pitt should just schedule every Big Ten team that Penn State doesn't have on their schedule. And then say that they play the harder schedule.
Be like the Eastern Eight. Centner, North Baldwin. Pitt fans are the closest thing we have to Boston fans. Awful and whiny. They're so worried about Penn State, they forget to buy tickets every Saturday. Looking forward to seeing Narduzzi roll out of town in a year or two. The only time I liked Pitt was when Wani was coaching because he was a fellow Baldwin alum.
I'll say the connection between Boston fans and the University of Pittsburgh fans is the constant victimization. That part of it is true. I don't know about the rest of it, but Pitt fans are very good. Part of the reason I had such a rivalry with Pitt fans, especially when I was doing the show on 1250 at night when Pitt was competitive with
They've always been
Walt's
relevant,
team.
Too. And to go back on that statement, I mean, they've had enough guys go into the pros, Pitt and Penn State. I feel like during this time, they've still been
No, I'm talking about
they haven't been irrelevant.
How long has it been since they've been in the top 25?
Well, okay.
The last time they were there, they were number 15. They lost week one to Notre Dame, and then they vanished.
Team-wise,
I'm talking
okay.
national discussion, not of the players individually coming out into the NFL. I'm talking about conversation within the national college football ranks.
They made a couple bowl games, including...
They're a mid-level
no,
Big
they made
East,
one bowl
and then
game
it became mid-level ACC.
What's
Come
wrong
on.
With the Compass Bowl? I like the Compass Bowl.
No, but Pitt Sorry. Fans are great at... When you say things like, boy... Pitt's got the deck stacked against them. It's hard to be a college team in a pro town and not have an on-campus building. You say something like that, and you try to make excuses for them.
Yeah.
That's when the alumni get their backs up and they bow out and say, "We're Pitt! Tony Dorsett went here! Hugh Green went here!
9 national champions.
Look at all the national championships we got! We should be better than that!" And you saying something like that means you're accepting mediocrity. Okay. Then they go out and they... blow a game against Georgia Tech, or they blow the game against Cincinnati or whatever, and you say that they've underachieved and they got all this talent and all these guys went to the National Football League like you just said, and then it's, why are you taking shots at Pitt? Look at their record versus other teams of their size. And they want to have it however you don't want to have it. They will make an excuse any time to
build
up their
team. Well, as it pertains to Penn State, they accuse Penn State fans of being exactly what they are to West Virginia. Looking down their nose at them, they don't matter, they're arrogant, and then they do the exact same thing to West Virginia. So, it's two-faced.
That's an hour of commercial-free internet radio.
Oh, it was a commercial for Pitt and Penn State is what it was.
Kind of was. All part of the Narduzzi and Franklin plan. We're brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand, the brand that vets recommend most for dog safety and freedom. And we're brought to you by Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER and all their weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Get your pumpkin at Oktoberfest beers before they are gone. Tom LaPresser at noon today. Tim Benz will ask the hard-hitting questions during, and he'll check in with us after. Mark Cabali will join us in 30 minutes to preview said presser and talk all things Steelers, give us updates on their injuries and what's happening on the South Side. Will Ben Roethlisberger play? More of your emails. We've got a bunch of them coming in on the Pitt-Penn State front. What do you think about what Narduzzi had to say? The overt shot at Penn State. Are we underrating the Penguins? Tell us what you think. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. And on the way, coaching firings / Steelers perception, power rankings, and whether they're as good as anybody in the AFC. We're going to get some football talk in those fronts next.
You already know that Invisible Fence Brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom. And expert installation plus professional pet training guarantee success. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. And online at duffysbeer.com.
Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
Trib Live Radio's version of the Three Stooges. Ken, Guy, and Tim. The Trib Live Radio Triple Play.
Answer the phone.
I'll answer it when I'm ready.
Yeah?
I'm ready.
Trip Total Media, see what's next.
Oh, a microphone.
And a phony at the mic.
Whoa! Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
It's the Trib Live Radio Morning Show. Kent Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. Mr. Benz will be departing here in a moment to head down to the Tomlin press conference. So if you have a question you would like Tim to grill Tomlin
Will he then
about,
be dearly departed?
Yeah, he will be. Well, dearly, I don't know. He'll be departed. And he'll be...
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to ask that question that guy brought up. Not because I'm, like, afraid of Tomlin, but I just... Everybody says that to me. Like, aren't you afraid of asking Tomlin? Or aren't you afraid of asking Cowher some questions? What's he going to do? Get up from behind the table and hit me in the head? Like, walk
Maybe.
Over?
That'd be a great lawsuit.
Yeah, would yeah. be, huh?
You could retire.
I'd own more of the Steelers than Tall.
Or at least as much.
No, but I just... That question about the two-point conversion, we went over that in pretty great detail yesterday. And I know yeah. I did last night on my show, too, from the bottle shop with Adam Crowley on 970. I know the answer, and I just don't want to be bullshat on it. And I will be bullshat on it if I bring it up.
He's going to say we're playing aggressive, playing to win. I think
last year
he's going to go to that.
Before the conversation about the moving back to the extra point and about the stats that go into it and the saber metrics and the score analysis and everything, it never would have entered his head to have gone for two in that situation last year. Never. He would have taken the one and gone up by a solid field goal. That's it. There's no discussion. He never would have done it. I don't need to be BS'd about it.
Yeah, but to your point, that shouldn't matter last year or this year. The tweaking of the rule shouldn't really affect.
It shouldn't, right. And I'm saying that the tweaking of the rule got the wheels turning, and he overcooked the decision, a la the phrase that the emailer used and Clint Hurdle coined.
Yeah.
Okay. I know the answer. The answer is yes, he overcooked it, and I don't need to be lied to in order to form my opinion. I will keep my opinion. He overcooked the decision. It's because the rules changed.
There will be a lot of quarterback questions, I am sure, asked at the press conference today. Doubt he'll answer nary a one. Maybe a health update on Mike Vick, I guess, in terms of how bad his hamstring is. But Ben certainly not ruling out the possibility that he could play this week. So you expect that to continue at noon today? He'll just have the subterfuge of three quarterbacks and they all might play?
Oh, he loves that, yes.
Yeah.
He will prefer that to be the case and give as many smokescreen answers to these questions as possible.
SportsTalkAtTripWeb.com. I want to play this Pat Narduzzi sound again for folks who are just joining us here in the 11 a.m. hour of the show. A little tweak from Pitt coach Pat Narduzzi, at least that's how I see it, and I don't even think it's actually even a question, although we have a tweet here that is questioning that, so I want to play it again for folks. Here's part of the Pat Narduzzi press conference yesterday.
It's all play calling, and it's all Coach Chaney. No, come on now. It takes players. Right, Nathan? Hey, did you hear that question up here?
Pete Bell.
Yeah, good. You know, he's been excellent. Is it play calling? Yeah, of course. I mean, you can have a talented quarterback with a bad play caller and make him look bad. We've seen that around the country, some closer than others.
There's no doubt that's a shot at John Donovan at Penn State.
Who else could it be?
Well, closer than others. I mean, you put the radius right. It's Penn State. Anyway, Mike says, did
is
you guys
like about Dana Holgorsen and Skylar Howard? Who else are we talking about here?
Yeah, who is the Skylar Howard coordinator? But Mike says, did you guys watch the entire Narduzzi press conference? I did, barely noticed the comment, didn't connect to Penn State. I just beg to differ, Mike. I don't know how you couldn't connect this to Penn State.
Let me ask you this. This story has been out there now for almost 24 hours. If it wasn't directed at Penn State, don't you think Pitt would have said something by now? Don't you think Narduzzi would have said something? Don't you think EJ would have been all over Twitter calling Pitt Radio 93.7 and saying, hey, can you say what he really meant? Don't you think they would have tried to control the message unless the message was exactly this, what it was intended to be?
Yeah, I don't. It's like dirt in the eye. Nobody would believe it, you know? Some things, you can say it, it just wouldn't do any good. Even if Narduzzi really didn't mean it, he could not convince me that he didn't mean it. I mean, if it was unfortunate and an accident, then that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was meant.
Patricia, though, says, 50 of us are going to the Pitt-Syracuse game because of this exciting energy from the coach. It has been contagious, guys.
Oh, come on. They weren't going to go to Pitt-Syracuse before he lobbed a grenade at Penn State.
Well, I don't know about
come
that.
Come on.
She just says the energy in general. I agree with her. It's just
all right, well, the energy in general
program.
Is no, the energy. This is now that email speaks to exactly what Guy is saying. The energy in general, if that's what's making you drive 5.5 hours to Syracuse, that's great. But that energy in general should be about the fact that you beat Georgia Tech. You're likely in the driver's seat of the ACC Coastal. You might go to the ACC Championship game. But let's not connect that to what he did yesterday.
Well, he's just a bolder, brasher Pitt coach who believes in his cocky.
Oh, I've loved everything he's done until this remark.
Yeah.
You know, and my point, as I keep saying, why can't you just leave it at your own success?
Coaches definitely make a difference. We're seeing this here between Paul Christ and Narduzzi at the college level. I wanted to bring up a couple pro examples. We've been talking about the Penguins and Mike Johnston's status or lack thereof and whether he's in the hot seat. The Colts lost that game to the Patriots and had the trick play of all trick plays, which, by the way, if you haven't seen the Tecmo Bowl recreation.
Oh, is that funny?
It's tremendous.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good job by Ben Stonium, as always.
It really is funny. But one of the guys from right when they ran that play from Sports Illustrated said, this is what Chuck Pagano calls the fire me right now play. People are saying that he might lose his job over this.
He was calling it the one play Bill Belichick didn't have illegally on tape to watch ahead of time play.
Yeah. Well, some people have said that. Like, you get so worked up playing Belichick as a coach, you try to outthink yourself. You think it just, you go through all the possible trick plays you can come up with to try to be aggressive, and you just overcook it, to use the phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Would firing Pagano be the right move? That Colts team is probably going to win the division anyway because their division's so bad. We don't see it as much in football where a mid-season coaching change for a team that's a competitor could spark
him. I wouldn't fire him right now.
It's a pretty disruptive thing for an NFL team, right? Although the Dolphins just won their game, I guess, with the new coach. They fired Philbin and he came back. And I'm just thinking about it compared to the Penguins.
The Colts have a lot more to lose than the Dolphins do, though, I think.
I can't remember who it was, but somebody in football made the comment that if you fire somebody in midseason, you better be ready to hire whoever it is that you are replacing them with, even if you don't want to. Because if you fire the guy and it works, and you put somebody in to run the team, it better be who you want it to be long term. Because if you do happen to win in an effort to save your season, the entire fan base
is going to want that person.
Is going
to
want
stay.
That guy to stay. So if you're going to promote a coordinator, you better want that coordinator to be ready to take over the job full time, or be prepared to lose the entire season anyway.
Like Bill Stewart at
and
West Virginia.
I don't think that you and I don't think you should be ready to sacrifice this whole season if you're a Colt fan, because, like you said, Ken, you play in a shit division and you're probably going to win it anyway.
I heard Tom Brady say once, every time there's a coaching firing across the league, we celebrate. Because we know that's going to set that franchise back another couple years. It's just by the sheer nature of change. Now, he's in a situation where he and Belichick work, and it might not be the best example. But that probably is some truth to that. Like, Marvin Lewis and the Bengals have been together so long, and I thought they should have fired him years ago, but they are probably reaping the rewards of having some continuity this year and the last four. I mean, it hasn't helped them win a playoff game, but they look good, and there just is a comfort, and you get things rolling a little bit. So I don't know if Pagano should be fired or not, but does that apply to the NHL, or is it a totally different thing?
No, like, I think it makes. The problem is, teams in the NFL don't win without a very good quarterback, and they don't win without a good coach, and there aren't enough of either to fill 32 teams.
Right.
I was in eighth grade when Chuck Noll got hired. They've had three coaches in that time. All three of them have won Super Bowls. And Cowher, I think, is the best example, because they probably, very few teams would have stuck with him, especially ones with the expectations of the Steelers through the 3 years they didn't make the playoffs.
The late 90s,
inner power struggle that was going on there and everything else. But they stuck with him, and they reaped the benefits of that as well. So I think I think it does set you back, especially if you bring in an entire new staff or close to it, new coordinators, because even with players that you have, usually that'll take a year or two for that adjustment to happen. You better be. And I think changing a coach at midseason to me is stupid, unless you do have somebody that you really want to hire. That, like, as soon as I hear the term interim, it better be December.
Well, for the Penguins too. So if it's interim coach at some point in December,
there's not a Jacques sport around where the coaches are less respected in general, and guys will get fired anywhere than hockey. Well, yeah, I guess, but one that I watch, I mean.
That's true. LeBron was basically the coach of the Cavs, right?
I think NBA coaches are even less influential than
I don't know,
coaches.
Like, how much respect does Phil Jackson get?
Well, I think hockey coaches can be influential. I just don't think they're respected. They get thrown out like,
okay,
yesterday's donuts.
You give me Phil Jackson, I'll give you Babcock. All right. You give me Greg Popovich, I'll give you Sutter. Or, I would have given you Bylsma for a long time. I mean, there's a few exceptions, but usually it's a turnover. There's a turnover there to both sports. Very
what
fast.
I've seen a lot in hockey is when the team is going well, they don't want to listen to the coach. The superstars want to run the team. When all of a sudden things are going wrong, they go to the coach and like, what can we do? They want leadership when things aren't going well. They want strategy when things aren't going well. When things are going well, they want to show up at practice without their helmets on.
Well, should the Penguins have any fears, I guess to get down to it, that replacing Mike Johnson, if they would need to, could be damaging, disruptive, like set the franchise back. There's
I don't think firing him is not going to set the franchise back because he's got nothing to do with the franchise. The franchise is 87 and 71. And the reason why the team is struggling right now is because 87 in particular, and for the most part of the season up until the last two games, 71 wasn't doing anything either. That's the franchise.
But they'll have to implement
a new
system.
If Sid had three goals over the first five games, they'd probably be 3-2 or 4-1.
Yeah.
You can fire Johnson and still have wiggle room to make a mistake. I mean, remember, Bylsma was hired on February the 15th. He didn't get the interim tag taken off of his name until April the 28th. That was, if I'm remembering right, after the first round of the playoffs, right? Middle of the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, and he didn't get the "you're no longer with the organization" tag taken off until 2 weeks after it should happen.
Right.
Either. I mean, especially if they would go Martin, Ken, the thing about their changes – the last couple, they brought guys up from Wilkes-Barre, so that's not the drastic change that would set the thing back.
It's not Tortorella coming in or
no.
something like that.
And even if Martin would get the job here, it's not going to be, you know, what they're actually doing on the ice may be drastic, but it's not going to set the organization back.
Yeah, like firing Pagano, for instance. All right, so the Colts are what, 3-3?
Colts are
3-3,
I think.
Okay.
I think that's right.
So let's say they go 9-7 and win that shit division.
Okay.
So they basically continue on the same path in terms of wins and losses. They're 9-7, they're 10-6, they win their crummy division and they get in. Like, who's to say you couldn't have done that with Pagano anyway? And now what do? Now you have a division championship under a coach and you're going to feel kind of, you're just going to let him go? You're going to blow him out too? Or what do you do?
Probably would hire him.
And yeah. Now what have you done? See, that's where the meanwhile in hockey, you've got a longer sample size. You've got months to look at. Ray Shiro showed you right there with that example in Dan Bylsma.
Yeah.
He needed to see him win a playoff round before he made him the permanent head coach.
Permanent coach, yeah. To the Steelers, one before we get back to the mail, here in the Morning Sports Report, brought to you by Duffy's Beer. Power rankings set to come out. How high will the Steelers go, and would you guys put them in the class now of, assuming Ben comes back here in the near future, which we think he will, every bit as dangerous or potential to win in the playoffs as, I was going to throw New England in here, but probably they're going to be above the crop, so let's leave them out. But the Bengals, who are undefeated, and the Denver Broncos. Have we risen expectations back up for the Steelers now based on what we've seen? Pretty good sample. The defense is looking legit. Are they as good as Cincinnati? Are they as good as Denver?
I think Denver's a little lopsided right now. I don't think they're that balanced offensively and defensively. Cincinnati's proven a lot to me. Cincinnati's got a running game. Cincinnati's got a passing game. Cincinnati can throw to the receivers. They can throw to the tight ends, and their defense is good.
Yeah.
And they've had a coach in place for a long period of time, and they might finally have gotten I think of Dalton as a guy that you know, wins at home and wins when the pressure's really not on. I read a stat after the game the other day. He has, like, I forget what it is, 90 road playoff wins, or it's not that many or whatever, faster than all but two quarterbacks in NFL history. So he's won on the road as well, too. So I'm not ready to say they're there but that would depend, too. Do you play the game in Denver? Do you play the game here?
They play the game here.
They play them back-to-back on the 13th and the 20th of December.
I mean if you would meet them in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, yeah.
In the playoffs, I think you have every right, with Peyton being what he is, you have every right to
think you could
pick the Steelers to beat the Broncos here or there based on their offense clicking on all cylinders with Ben back, Bryant there, Pouncey probably not, I understand, but Bell, if they're all healthy, you have every right to say, I give the Steelers a real shot to beat the Broncos.
They can't
lose
another offensive lineman, Ken.
That's true.
We haven't seen, and by all accounts, and but we didn't mention it, they signed that Stingley guy yesterday because we talked about Mike Adams, and he's still not ready to come off pup. And Villanueva played well jumping into the fire on Sunday. But, you know, you lose two-fifths of that. If you lose three-fifths of it, I mean, it's going to have an effect. I don't care if Roethlisberger comes back and everybody else is healthy or not.
Who's laughing now, O-line?
But, I mean, who here wouldn't like to see this team play? I mean, I'd like to see this team go out there with Shazier, with Jarvis Jones, with Will Allen. I don't care about Cortez Allen. With Roethlisberger. You know, I mean, you're not going to have Pouncey. The offensive line is what it is. With Martavis Bryant. with Le'Veon Bell. I mean, they've been missing all of those or some of those guys every single game. And I understand that it's a game of injuries and you don't have that luxury often, but they still have the potential to play games down the stretch with all of those guys.
Yeah.
If they can go 4-2 with half of those guys missing or suspended, I think they could stack up with you. But I think, yeah, you can ponder the question, but it's going to be proven on the field. They get Cincinnati twice, and they get Denver.
It's not a laughable question, though, right? I mean, they're sort of back in the people are believing in the Steelers as a threat. Here are the power rankings at NFL.com from this morning. It was written by Elliot Harrison. Who is he? I have no idea. Patriots 1, Packers 2, Bengals 3. All the undefeated teams. Carolina up to 4, and Denver sinking one spot to 5. Then the teams with at least one loss. Atlanta 6, the Jets 7, and the Steelers 8.
Jets in front of the Steelers?
Jets in front of them. They have played a fewer game, and they're 4-1. Todd Bowles and the Jets.
Their defense has been real good.
It has. They also have Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback.
Yeah, when push comes to shove and you've got to score in an important game, I don't know.
Rounding out the top 10, by the way, the Cardinals still in the top 10, number 9, and the Vikings in at 10, at 3-2. And if the Vikings are really the 10th best team in the league, this is not a very good league.
You know what's funny is I talked about this in the show last night, too, on 970s. If you look at defensive rankings and the standings, it corresponds a lot more than it has in recent years.
That's true, including
for
the Vikings.
For as much of an offensive league as this is supposed to be, and for as much of a quarterback league as this is supposed to be, you know, all those teams you rattled off right there, I think you just rattled off the top 10 defensive teams in varying order, of course, but you just rattled off, the top 10 defensive teams in football.
Are the Patriots in the
Yeah, they're number 9.
Are they really?
They're like number 9 or something like
That's hard to believe.
I know, right? Exactly.
Their defense looked terrible week 1.
Yeah. With all the changes in the secondary?
All right, a couple emails here. Robin Richmond says, folks keep talking about the Cubs postseason run with that Back to the Future 2 angle. You know, they were destined to win the series because of the movie.
Right.
However, the day Marty McFly goes back to the future, October 21st, 2015, will be the day the Cubs are eliminated if the Mets can sweep. That'd be a nice little chapter to add to the Cubs' tragic history, wouldn't it?
Another bad movie reference by Cub fans. Or the manager. First Rocky, now this.
They can't even get the Back to the Future 2 premonition right. Obviously didn't have the Gray's Almanac that Biff Sr. had when he went
That's right, because he gambled
back
on all
to
the sports,
past.
Right?
Right. Bart in Baltimore emails, I've got the solution to the backup quarterback situation on Sunday, guys. Here it is. Antonio Brown, since he played quarterback in high school, can throw passes to himself. Then he won't have anybody to yell at.
That's when Heath Miller gets mad about not getting the ball. That's when Heath Miller is allowed
Get
to blow
involved.
His stack.
Antonio Brown spoke yesterday. We're going to hear his audio coming up in a bit. I didn't listen to it yet, but it sounded like he was just asked about the critics, you know, and he said there's just going to be critics no matter what you do.
There weren't a lot of critics when he was just doing what he needed to do. It's critics now because he's lashing out.
Yeah, and I wonder if Tomlin is asked about that or addresses it further today at the presser, Tim. Do you think he...
I thought he was pretty good in how he handled it, actually, after the game itself, where he said, you know, the one thing Antonio needs is a ring. That was less than subtle.
Agreed.
I got to see a man about a horse before I get out of here. So.
Okay, thanks, Tim.
All right, no sweat.
TMI. But we'll listen in at the
Look
press
at
conference.
Look at its teeth. It's very important.
Got some updates from Penn's practice this morning, Guy, as far as line combinations. I know you love your line combinations.
Oh, on the day of a game, absolutely.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I mean, that's who's going to play that night.
Okay.
I don't like talking about them in mid-September with a roster of 40 men.
Fleury was the first goalie off, so it appears he will play again. So Zatkoff has yet to play a game for this team.
Fleury's playing well, and the games have been spread out. Take advantage of it while you can. 600 NHL games he's played now.
No Bo Bennett, morning skate. Daniel Sprong is also missing from the morning skate. And... not sure what the deal is.
Maybe he didn't have his homework done.
He's got a curfew. Dupuy is back. He went down the runway for a bit. It came back. So he was skating with the team. So it appears he's part of it. Eric Fair's also on the ice, but those guys aren't expected to play tonight, of course. They did not do line rushes, but here's what they did work on, guys.